Happy Monday, Nashville. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I'm Michelle Knezovic. We've got Junie Riddle. He has not left his seat, coming off a little Robbie and Rex Road this morning. Junie Riddle will be filling in for Joe Rex Road tomorrow as well. We are live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios this morning. Nick Kieser with us on the board. If you want to watch us streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, our stream is presented by Superbook Sports. And join 102.5 The Game, the Preds Energy Team at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs this Thursday, March 30th for the Preds Road Watch Party as your Nashville Predators take on the Pittsburgh Penguins. Stop by and enjoy Brewhouse South's 70 beers on tap, classic American menu, along with Cajun Southwestern Island Comfort Food. That's 102.5 The Game, Preds Energy Team at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Happy Monday, everyone. Got a lot to recap this weekend in the sports world. The Final Four is set. FAU and San Diego State and UConn in Miami. I think there are about 37 brackets who picked this as a Final Four. And I need to know who these 37 people are, because I could not even imagine this, Junie. Could not even imagine that these four teams would be in the Final Four right now.
Yeah, no, I think there's had to be a lot of randomness to the picking if you were one of the 37 out of millions who made brackets. You know, maybe you just like the state of Florida, since, you know, FAU and Miami are so close, and San Diego, another tropical city. Maybe you just picked your favorite travel destinations and you just are so happily from Connecticut. So if you picked the right Final Four, congratulations to you, because, I mean, these teams are really deserving. I mean, some of these matchups and some of these end of game situations that FAU and San Diego State in Miami, you know, down double digits in the second half against Texas yesterday, coming out and then just blowing the doors off of it in the final 10 minutes. This tournament has been one of the best I've ever watched. For me personally, it's not about the big names in the tournament. It's about the upsets. It's about the big moments. And this year has been filled with them. And I couldn't have asked for a better tournament with more randomness and more underdogs just sneaking their way into the Final Four.
Well, and we've discussed, I mean, other than the 2011 year when actually UConn is in both of them, but the Final Four in 2011 was UConn, Kentucky, and then VCU was that 11 seed in Butler. You know, this is the second Final Four with, if you add up all the seedings, they have the highest number, right? So, or, well, lowest seed. I always flip those around. But I want to know how fans feel about the parity in college basketball, because we had a texter on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com earlier this morning. And if you want to text in, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We had a texter on the text line earlier this morning saying that they hate it. They hate that you're not actually getting to see, you know, the Alabamas and some of these higher profile programs in the Final Four, because, you know, when you take a look at this tournament as a whole, a lot of the times you'll have those big dogs prevail at the end. I mean, there were no one seeds in the Elite Eight this year, which was, I mean, incredible. And we've thrown out the stat there that the number one overall seed hasn't won this tournament since Louisville in 2013. And I asked the question to fans, I mean, do you like the parity? Because I understand for TV networks and the guys who are trying to make the big bucks, it's not sexy. It's not an Alabama, a UConn, a Kansas, a Duke, right? It's not those big top dog programs. They're programs that have gone, that aren't Power Five, and have won their way by having guys stay there for 4 years, or having transfers, older guys on their team, and not weighing into the one and done, just getting the McDonald's All-Americans and highest profile recruits. But I love it. I mean, I'm probably one of the biggest college basketball fans at our station, along with Joe Rexroad. I love an underdog, Junie. I love the fact that we don't have blue bloods in here, and it's not Duke winning another one, or UNC, or Kansas. I mean, I know UConn is in there, and they've won in the past, but I love the idea of Miami making it. I love the idea of San Diego State. I mean, San Diego State's coach, he was a part of recruiting the Fab Five at Michigan and has done great things to that San Diego State program. They were great last year, and they got knocked out of the tournament by Creighton, actually, mm-hmm. which they survived yesterday and find themselves in the Final Four. So I love the parody. I want to know what fans think. Do you like it? Do you not like it? Do you like it, Junie?
I do personally. And it's, you know, for those that don't, I just think maybe you just don't like this sport, because that's what this tournament is all about. You know, the best team doesn't always win. It's the team that gets hot. It's the team that plays the most. It's the team that has the most chemistry and can come up in the clutch. You know, different years have different outcomes. And it's like, if you like the Blue Bloods making it, well, guess what? You know, last year we had Duke versus North Carolina in the Final Four. And then on the other side was, it was Coach K's final game as a Duke Blue Devil. And then on the other side, we had Villanova and Kansas. So we had a Kansas UNC Blue Blood National Championship, and that's how it played out. And, you know, this year is a bit different, and every year it is different, you know. And I think that that's what makes college basketball special, is because you never know. It could be a year to where, you know, the favorites go all the way and you get the marquee matchups between the big-time programs, and then other years it's like this and like how it was in 2011. And I would even say UConn nowadays, because, you know, back then when UConn was winning championships, they were in the Big East, back when the Big East was the best basketball mm-hmm. conference. Nowadays they're not, and they're kind of under the radar now. They're not the big-time program that they used to be in the big-time conference. So I love the parody. I love, you know, the veteran teams getting their opportunity to shine, because, you know, you're going to see the players at Alabama play at the next level.
You are.
You're not going to see these guys, like, ever again. This is their shining moment, and this is and for me, the unknowingness of college basketball is what makes it special.
Nicole Auerbach had a perfect Twitter thread on Twitter that I think encapsulates the NCAA tournament. She said, the NCAA tournament isn't designed to crown the best team in the sport all year. Sometimes the best team does win it all, but oftentimes it comes down to chaos, individual matchups, and a night when your best shooters suddenly can't hit a three. That's why it's so compelling. It's also why I love that we celebrate milestones. We celebrate things like the Final Four, the Sweet 16, because it's hard to even make the tournament. So I'm glad we throw a camera into it and have parties when you celebrate being selected for the tournament. But you don't have to be the best team in the country to win this thing. You just got to win 6 games and be a little bit better than those 6 opponents. However you match up against them, it's super fun, but it doesn't mean you were the best team in college basketball. And I agree with, I think she put it perfectly. And I think that's why this tournament is so special and why you can actually see these mid-major teams be competitive in it, Junie. Nate on the text line says, I like the parody because it shows mid-majors can be competitive for a championship. I think at first people are clamoring it, but actually, when it actually happens, they change their mind for some sort of reason. And then we have another texter text in and say, the parody is great when it's entertaining basketball. Years where mid-majors drag down play, make it ugly. Low-scoring games are painful to watch. And I agree. But, I mean, we've seen national championships with a – I think of when Kentucky won in 2012, when it was Kansas-Kentucky. I mean, we've seen games that aren't close with two huge programs.
Yeah.
So I don't think that determines whether we get a good college basketball game. I mean, if both teams are competitive with each other. I mean, look at UConn these last two games with Gonzaga and Arkansas. I was very excited, thought they'd both be too close down to the wire games, and UConn just blew past both of those top teams in the country to make it to the Final Four. And I'm excited that it'll be UConn, Miami, and then San Diego State, FAU on the other side. So we will get to see either San Diego State, Junior, or FAU will be going to the national championship.
Which I think is awesome. And you know me, I've been on this FAU train even before the tournament started. You know, being a alumni of a team that played against FAU in Conference USA, you know, I'm really familiar with their athletic program. And outside of when Lane Kiffin went there to coach for football, you know, they don't have a lot of success. And when you finally see a school like that, that's super small in Boca Raton, Florida, you know, their gym could be compared to some of the bigger high school gyms.
Probably similar to Lipscomb Academy around the corner.
Probably. And it's just good to see, because they have legit players. Like, John L. Davis is a legit point guard in Division I NCAA. And you look at a guy like Vlad Goldin, the way that he played against Kansas State. You know, I thought the way that Noel was dishing it to his big guys, how shifty he is and can create space, and he was just kind of dishing it to his really athletic bigs down low. I thought that Vlad Goldin was going to get exposed against Kansas State. And what did he do? He showed up and showed out and had an excellent game and was probably the reason what took them over the edge to win and led them to the Final Four. So being able to see a team like FAU go 31-3 in the regular season, just be dominant, and then they show it in the tournament against some of the best basketball teams in the nation, it has been something fun to watch. And if you truly don't like that in a defensive
You're no
fun. I mean, how awesome was Creighton San Diego State yesterday? And it was what, 57-56? So what, they're low scoring. Playing defense in basketball is awesome. And you don't see it nowadays because of how much refs call fouls, how elevated the three-point shot has been. I love seeing gritty, tough, hard-nosed basketball like that. And if you don't like it, then maybe you just like the modern age basketball. And I personally think it's kind of boring.
How do you feel about the parity in college basketball? Text us, call us, 615-737-1025. And how do you feel about the Final Four matchups coming up this weekend? Got a couple texts on the text line we are going to get to. We want to hear from you all. Text, calls. How do you feel about this Final Four matchup coming up next weekend? You're listening to Chase and Michelle on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Chase Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the Game. Michelle Knezovic. We have got Chase McKay back at the house, back from Superbook in Las Vegas. Nick Kieser with us. We are live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. Chase got the opportunity to watch a lot of college basketball at the Superbook Sportsbook in Las Vegas. TV surrounded you. What a great setup, and what a front row seat. To some college basketball games, Chaser.
So you've been to a sports book before, right? But
correct.
But not in Vegas.
No. Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
So Vegas is a whole different animal. It just, I don't know what it is. It's obviously the size, but there's just a different feeling. Like going in a casino in Evansville, Indiana, as opposed to Vegas, is just completely different. And so I had never been to Superbook before. I had never been to the Westgate. And it was awesome. Just the atmosphere, you know, just the ebbs and flows of a game. You know, there was like a group of Michigan State fans that were, were there, and like Arkansas fans. And, you know, what was funny is, I mean, we kept running into Arkansas fans that, even though Arkansas was playing in Vegas, they were just at the book, you know, watching that way, just wanted to be in the city. So it was certainly a cool experience, and got to hang out with some of the folks from Superbook. So it was neat, but watching all these games this weekend, I'm tired just from that. obviously, I'm tired because it's Vegas and the time change and all of that. But,
it's just the time change,
just
I'm sure.
Just
that
change.
Jet lag getting chased in Vegas.
Yeah, but look, I will say this, and I know you and Junie started talking about college basketball and the parity in college basketball. I love what we're seeing. I think that the NCAA tournament, the way that it's set up, is set up to provide that it's not always going to be the blue bloods, that it's not always going to be the Dukes and the Carolinas and the Kentuckys. And I guess you could probably say UConn is maybe in that mix, but yeah, they haven't been around there in a while.
Yeah, as of recent, they haven't been a team that's been making Final Fours.
Yeah. I mean, to watch Miami yesterday be down like they were and just battle back. I was at the Preds game, but I was watching it at the same time, and I just looked at people and I go, is this happening? Like, this is fantastic. And then San Diego State, you know, pulling it out over Creighton. I hate how that one ended, but I put that in the same, like, the Super Bowl with the holding call. And
it sucks because they didn't blow the whistles much at all during the game. There wasn't a lot of, you know, foul shots really on either end. There weren't a lot of fouls. And then for that, I understand why it was a foul, but for that to determine the outcome of a game where I'm pretty sure everybody would have loved overtime, And, you know, I thought the senior at San Diego was going to miss both foul shots. And I'm sitting on my couch getting nervous for him. I'm like, oh, gosh. Oh, gosh, he missed the first one. This is going to be bad. And, I mean, it just sucks to see a game end like that, especially when you are advancing to the Final Four where they were tied. Maybe you could have gone to overtime, but I do understand. It was a foul. And then on the other hand, I mean, I had been on the K-State train.
Yeah.
And FAU proved me wrong again. I thought there'd be a slight chance that they could beat Tennessee. And then they go ahead and they beat Kansas State, the hot team, over up in Madison Square Garden. And now we have a Final Four that I could have never imagined. And I told Junie this, Chase, earlier, that the March Madness Twitter page put out 37 people picked this Final Four, which I don't understand how.
That's impressive.
And I need to find one of these 37 people and be like, did you just go ahead and pick randoms? Did you have an inkling? But a lot of people actually, Chase, on the text line are...
Real quick. I want to hit something real quick.
Go for it.
Back on the foul. So one of the smartest things that CBS ever did was hiring Gene Steratore, because you got a guy that has officiated Super Bowls and NCAA tournaments, and so I think he's really, really smart. So I love when there is a situation like this and they can go to Gene Steratore and he can break it down. This was him on the broadcast yesterday on the call at the end of the Creighton and San Diego State game.
Hey, we not going to them worry about 0.2 seconds. What about the foul call?
Listen, we can sit and dissect a bunch of plays every day, Charles, and throughout every game. And we do. Everybody does. You have to, it's an angle play. We can see the official that's inbounding on this play, the trail official. He'll step down. He's taking the basketball. It's his primary. He's creating an angle for himself. And as he followed that play in, he's the one who posts the foul. In his opinion, he felt like that left hand had displaced that shooter to a place that affected his shot. That's his judgment. That's why he's in this game. That's the decision that he made based on the angle that he had.
And it was the right
and
call.
And then we can contemplate that.
But it was the
you
right
can
call.
Say it's not big enough because in this game we're supposed to swallow the whistle. We can
airborne
have those
shooter.
Conversations for the rest of the week and
the
on into
in
next
the air,
week.
It doesn't take much contact to create a foul. That's my opinion.
Okay. So in Gene Steratore said it there, like, in these games we're supposed to swallow the whistle. And you've heard me say, but I've been one of those, like, I would prefer you to let them play. I want to see that. But Gene makes me feel better about things when he explains it. And he's, you know, I mean, he's right. You know, they got the call right. I hate that it ends that way. Nobody wanted to see that it ended that way. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to decide, do you want the integrity of the game or do you want to, you know, do you just want a fun ending?
Yeah, and I mean, the point is where the foul was at the point of the game. It's not necessarily like maybe they didn't call that earlier in the game or maybe they did call something that was not as bad as that. What it comes down to is, Chase, like you said, that's to go to the Super Bowl. Or was that the Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes? That was the Super Bowl.
Where the holding call was?
He pushed. Oh, yeah. It was the holding call. You know, it is, right, a foul or it is a holding call. And for our enjoyment in watching something go into overtime, we're like, oh, just swallow the whistle in that moment. But, I mean, it is the right call.
Yeah.
I believe it is the right call. So, selfishly, would have loved to see overtime. But, I mean,
sure, so would I.
It was a foul. Right. And San Diego State advances. Actually, Creighton was the one who knocked San Diego State out last year in the tournament. It wasn't to go to the Final Four, but, you know, it was a great game back and forth, battled the entire game. You give credit to Creighton, but San Diego State was the one who ultimately got it done and is going to be competing in the Final Four. So
does anyone believe Florida Atlantic can actually do this?
I do.
Do you?
I mean, they beat Tennessee. Tennessee at one point this year was the best team in the country.
Yeah.
They beat the best team in the country. They just beat Kansas State, who just, you know, beat Kentucky, Michigan State. I mean, the team's only lost 3 games all year.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, and Middle was one of them.
Middle was one of them. UAB, who beat Vanderbilt in the NIT here. And ironically, Ole Miss, like preseason, they lost to them. But, I mean,
They belong.
They know how to win.
Yeah, they've shown they belong. I'm curious, you know, UConn, just even though this team doesn't necessarily have the experience, but it's UConn, you know, do you give the edge to them? But the fact that you have 2 5s, a 4 and a 9 in the Final Four is just awesome. I love it. I think that is why the NCAA tournament is so great. And 615-737-1025, that's our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. If you want to weigh in on that, on the parity, you know, I'm just a sports fan, and especially an underdog fan.
Me too.
So I love this. But does the, you know, and I am a what I consider an average basketball fan. I'm not a basketball Benny, as Jared would say. but I enjoy the tournament. I'm excited about this Final Four. Are you? 615-737-1025. We'll continue that discussion coming up next. We'll have the power play. Big weekend for the Predators and Pecorine at the end of the hour, and then we'll get into the Titans at the top of the next hour as well. I'm back from Vegas. It's Chase and Michelle, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Join 1025 The Game for the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament benefiting Souls for Souls on June 7th at Hermitage Golf Course. You can put your team together and come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebs to support a great cause and have loads of fun. Plus, you'll have the chance to win awesome prizes. Sign up to play, sponsor, or donate at thegamenashville.com/golf. Back here, Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063 The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezevic, the reporter Nick Keyser with you. As we talk about college basketball, the Final Four is set. How do you feel? And I want to hear more. I feel like I'm in a minority as a average, just, you know, basketball fan, not like following it. You know, like you are all about it.
I'm
like
a basketball Benny.
Yeah, you're a basketball Benny. You know, Joe Rexroad, obviously. I like to watch good games and stuff, but I also I'm a fan of underdogs, and so the fact that you got 2 5s, a 4 and a 9 in the Final Four, no ones, no twos, that to me is exciting. But
no threes.
How does the average basketball fan feel? And I know we got a caller and we got a couple of texts as well.
Yeah. So Allie in Bellevue, I think this is kind of funny too. She said, people were going to be mad either way. The whole blame the refs. Oh, sorry. That's the wrong text message. She said, I don't understand why some legit sports people are suddenly so concerned with TV numbers. It's so and so quick to write off these remaining teams, which is really funny because now we're seeing people are like, oh, well, this isn't a sexy Final Four and people aren't going to tune in. It's like, when have we ever cared about, when do sports fans actually care about the ratings? You just care about actually watching the game. Caleb texts in and says, or Brad texts in and says, college basketball is unwatchable. It's just a three-point contest and everything is a foul. Teams from the 80s and 90s would dominate. I don't agree with that. But, I mean, Nate texts in. He said, I like parity because it shows that mid-majors can be competitive for a championship. I think at first people were clamoring for it, but then when it actually happens, they change their mind for some reason. And I agree. I mean, every time people's like, we love to see the Cinderella stories. But if last year St. Peter's made it into the Final Four and it wasn't UNC, people would be like, oh, we wanted to see UNC in the Final Four. We've seen them in the Final Four so many times over and over again. We've seen Kansas. We've seen Kentucky. We've seen Duke, Villanova. I mean, I think that this just shows college basketball as a whole has expanded so much, and you can see that the transfer portal, NIL, I mean, it's allowing so many more teams to be competitive in this tournament, and I love it. I mean, people are saying that it's not going to be as high level of basketball. I mean, why not? San Diego Right. State went head to head with Alabama and beat
We've
them.
Seen some good games.
We've seen some great games.
You know, like I don't subscribe to the narrative that just because. Well, and I think it's kind of typical, and maybe it's just human nature that you see a seed, you see a number next to a team, and you just think, oh, they're not good. I don't subscribe to that. You know, I think that, you know, that they all four teams deserve to be there. They deserve to be in the tournament, and they won the games. That's, at the end of the day, that's what it is. That's what a tournament is, that you you know, you win the games, you get to keep going, survive in advance.
Exactly.
And that's what they did.
No, exactly, Chase. And the thing about this tournament is that it's not always the best team that wins. Sometimes it is. But a majority of the time, the way this tournament is set up and the ability to win so many games in a short amount of time, six games in a row, you know, when you're facing teams that you don't have much time to prepare for, they're not in your conference. So, well, sometimes, but you don't see them year in and year out. You have to, you know, watch film on them quickly, prepare quickly, be able to adjust on the fly. But what I love about this tournament is that they celebrate milestones along the way.
Mm-hmm.
To even just make it into the tournament is a huge accomplishment. I mean, we saw Vanderbilt, the team that was performing at such a high level this year, and they get left out. So they do like the Selection Sunday. And then to make it to the Sweet 16, you get a banner for that because it's so incredibly hard to do. And then the Elite Eight, and then the Final Four, and then ultimately somebody is crowned the championship. I'm not saying, you know, you need to be rewarded for everything you do in sports. But I think it's super unique the way they do this tournament because it isn't always the best team that wins.
Yeah, and I mean, it is an accomplishment to get to, you know, as far as you've got. Like, FAU, no matter what happens, they can celebrate that they have gone to the Final Four. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. But I think somebody was – I was just texting with somebody that it's a weird – this is such a weird tournament. And it kind of felt like – I felt like it was going to be that way in the regular season that – You mentioned Tennessee at one point in time was the best team in the country, and it just there was a lot of shaking up at the top, and so that gave me hope that this could be an exciting tournament, and it certainly lived up to that. You know, bracket pools, you said what 37 have it right?
Like, just had the Final Four. I mean, they didn't get everything right.
Yeah, but they have the Final Four. I should say, like, this is this has just kind of been a crazy year for that. So, which I think is fun. 615-737-1025. Let's go to Weston on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Weston, what's up?
Morning, Weston.
Hey, good morning, guys. A couple quick things. Is one, this is great for college basketball because three out of the four teams have never won a championship, and it's going to give them the opportunity to do so. With that being said, if you look at UConn and if you study analytics, the three of the last four championships going back to 04, 011, and 14 were all in Texas. It's being played in Houston this year. Another thing about UConn is the last time they won the championship was 2014. They won all of their games leading up to the Final Four by double digits, which they just did that again this year. So just some analytics there for y'all to think about. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Weston.
Appreciate the call.
I love those interesting little nuggets. Like every time they've won in Texas, I will say 2011, 2014, they beat Kentucky, so I don't love those. But no, I mean, UConn has looked like the best team in college. I mean, they beat Gonzaga by almost 30 points or 30 points. I mean, that was incredible. They beat Arkansas by double digits. I think that we're going to get a good game with Miami. But, I mean, the level that UConn has been playing at, I mean, it really is just incredible. Gary Texan, Chase, I think this is an interesting question. Do you think if college football goes to the 12-team playoff, a 2-3 loss team plays in the championship game, that people will feel the same way they do about this Final Four?
Depends on who it is.
I mean, if it's Alabama, I don't think people are going to feel that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, it honestly depends on who it is. College football is going to be interesting because I think the one reason that, you know, they're wanting to do this is it's a twofold thing. You've added the transfer portal to the mix where everybody gets their one.
Mm-hmm.
And so you essentially have free agency in college football, mm-hmm. even though they don't want to call it that. That's basically what it is. And so that is going to open up the door that, you know, if you're a good recruiter and recruiting your own players and recruiting high school players and recruiting college players, that you can get lucky and build a super team for 1 year, then you can knock off the Georgias and the Alabamas and, you know, those teams. And so you could have another team. But I think it's going to be harder in college football to have FAU, for example, you know, show up and win the whole thing. It just it's – and, I mean, that's different because it's a group of five. But I just – it's not going to be as easy. But I do think that's the hope, that you're going to get some different teams in there because you're expanding the field.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an expansion of more Power 5 programs having an opportunity to compete for a championship. I mean, we talk about, with the way it's set up now, you can pretty much bank on either Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, Michigan, whoever else I'm forgetting, competing. I mean, you could throw an Oklahoma or a Texas in there, competing for a championship. But now expanding it to 12, I think we're going to get a lot of games, those first couple matchups, some competitive ones. I think once you get to the final game, that a Georgia will still prevail, and Alabama will still prevail. I mean, we kind of saw it this year with TCU. They had an incredible run. I think you could see more of that this year, but what happened in the final game? I mean, Georgia was the overall better team in all of college football. So I think that it will start to expand the game and more teams will get competitive. Chase, you mentioned the transfer portal. I mean, if there's a backup quarterback on Alabama and he's like, well, I can go start at some Big Ten school and then they can become more relevant and sneak into the college football playoff. I mean, you just don't know. Or you talk about Caleb Williams at USC. I mean, what could they look like next year? They haven't been in the college football playoff in a minute. So I think it's just going to expand programs, have more programs having an opportunity to compete. I don't think an FAU, I mean, football is just so different. Basketball, you're hitting your shots. I mean, anybody can win. But, I mean, just as far as how physical the game of football is, size, you can't really overcome that in a game like that. But I do think it will make the college football playoff more interesting. Teams with two or three losses will be in and able to compete for a championship. But
well, it's Ricky just texted me. There'll be another Cincinnati. I mean, it opens the door for more Cincinnati's. And, well, Cincinnati's even more because they were group of five. So
yes, true.
That I just muted myself. Thank Rex Road.
You're in his chair.
I am in his chair. So I, you know, but and I want that. Like, you know, I don't want to see Alabama win it every year. I don't want to see Georgia win it every year. I mean, like, if Tennessee gets there, then because of where their program has been over the last 20 years, I look at that as, okay, that's different.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they were in the mix, that's different. You know, I mean, Michigan, it's funny you bring up Michigan because I think a lot of traditionalists would look at that as, okay, well, that's a blue blood college program, even though when's the last time, you know, they have, I know they've made the playoff, but they haven't won at all in a long time. So it's certainly interesting as college athletics continues to evolve. And, you know, with the tournament, with the NCAA tournament, I think you're going to continue to see more of this because of the transfer portal and guys that are bouncing around.
Well, I think it also, too, adding to that is just over the last couple of years, if you want to just take a look at college basketball as a whole and you look at women's and men's, I mean, it's the expansion of AAU and the exposure, too, we've seen over the years, over the last decade of kids playing college basketball competitively at such a young age. I mean, for a long time, they only had the five-star basketball camp where everybody would go there, and that's how you developed as a young basketball player wanting, you know, to go be successful in college. But with AAU now, and we're seeing it in women's college basketball. I mean, for so long it was the Tennessee Volunteers, Lady Vols, it was UConn, and now we're seeing more programs like, you know, Caitlin Clark at Iowa, shout out, had the first ever triple double in an NCAA tournament game, men's and women's. LSU, South Carolina, Miami women's basketball, they just got knocked out. So you're seeing programs expand. Women's basketball is still in the Power Five because they're behind the men's as far as, you know, just exposure in the game. But I think it's just college basketball expanding as a whole. You mentioned the transfer portal, NIL, right? People doing their COVID year and their fifth year and things like that. It's everything playing a role into the expansion and why some non-Power Five schools can become competitive. And listen, we will see one win it at some point. We could this year.
You never know. For sure. Enjoy the conversation. Coming up next, we get into the Predators. A big weekend for Peck Arena, but unfortunately not able to get the points that the Predators desperately need, and we will discuss that. Coming up next, they have a game tomorrow, and it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty and Superbook Sports. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game tomorrow night, you'll win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate in Pick to Click tomorrow at 8:45. with Robbie and Rex Road. Power Play coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
It's time for the Daily Power Play.
And the score! A power play goal for the Predators.
Covering the Predators and the NHL.
With a shot that stopped by Searles.
Now on Chase and Michelle.
Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Back here talking the power play, as we do every day at 9:45. Predators, unfortunately, dropping both on Saturday and Sunday to Seattle and then Toronto. The game yesterday against Toronto was entertaining. It was a good one. They hung in there. We're down 2-0 at one point, made it 2-1. Then they were down 3-1. Able to battle back, get a 6-on-5 goal, and unfortunately just came up a little bit short and fall 3-2. And, you know, this time of year, you got to have the points. And that was what I was afraid of when they went through this process of – and I was, you know, having this conversation with somebody at the game yesterday, that it's not so much that they sold off. It's the fact that they're hurt. I mean, it's all the injuries mm-hmm. that – they are faced with right now, and you know, not having Josi and Forsberg and Johansson and Parsonen, and you know, it's just
and last night and Matthew Duchesne getting hurt.
You know, so I mean, it's just at some point all that's going to catch up to you. But I love the fight and determination with this team that they have, and you know, obviously it was a huge weekend for Pekka Rinne, and I hate that was the one thing about this trip that I realized that I was going to miss, and I hate that I missed that with Pekka, and you know, getting to see him, and I know he was around and talking to everybody. I saw, you know, I was able to keep up with it on social media though, which was nice.
Yeah.
I saw Jill Jelnick from Fox 17 put a package together with him and talking to him, that he's like, I have a stinking statue, you know, like,
well,
which is crazy.
You're listening to him speak, right? And he's almost in disbelief. And we talked about this on Saturday that, you know, Pekka's always been the most humble guy when he's speaking. And I think one of his comments was, yeah, I have a statue now. Like, me? Who, me? Me? But
well, like, he's such a humble guy. Like, yeah. Like, the thing about my favorite part about Pekka, we did a thing about 4 or 5 years ago, I think it was, where I think it was around their 20th anniversary, that we did the top 20 Predators in Predators history, and Pekka was number one, obviously. And we sat at Centennial Sportsplex when we were unveiling number one, and we got Pekka on, and I remember Darren looking at him going, this is going to be really uncomfortable for you because I know you hate talking about you. Like, it's all about his team, and he's just, I mean, he's just such a humble guy, and that's what I love about it. But so that was a cool thing to see. I went down there yesterday, and I didn't walk out on the plaza and see the statue, so I still haven't seen it.
You didn't?
No, I thought about it, but I was running late, and I was meeting people, and I get in there, and
it'll be there forever. So.
Sure. Like, I don't think I'm going to miss it. But when I got in my car and I was driving home, I was like, I didn't go see that statue. I got to go see Pekka.
So after Junie and I show, the ceremony was going on during our show, but the show starts at 9, and Sean Henry and all the Preds people told fans to get there early and start to fill the plaza. I was rolling up to Broadway and Bridgestone Arena around 8:40, 8:45. Oh, and Preds fans were in numbers out there. They had their Preds gear on. There's some cool pictures of people from on top of Tootsies, on top of Rippies, that kind of look over the plaza area where the statue was. So it just looked like an amazing ceremony. The weather was beautiful, and yeah, it was a great ceremony. And Chase, we have a little breaking news in the NFL.
I see that.
Not to switch gears too much right now, but Lamar Jackson has tweeted on Twitter, a letter to my fans. I want to first thank you all for the love and support you consistently show towards me. All of you are amazing, and I appreciate you all so much. Want you to know, not to believe everything you read about me. Let me personally answer your questions. And he goes on to have a Twitter thread, and they're not all connected.
Well, an NFL Network has it right now, too. Basically, he's requested a trade, and he did so on March 2nd, according to reports and what NFL Network has up there right now. Not really surprising. I don't know where this thing's going to go. I mean, I have always kind of felt like he wasn't going to be back with the Ravens. I did for a little bit, and then I was thinking he probably wouldn't. But I'm going to tell you right now, I don't want to hear it. He's not coming here. He's not coming here. If he does, we can come up with something stupid for me to do if that will make everybody feel better. But I don't think it's going to happen at all.
Yeah, so he said, as of March 2nd, I requested a trade from the Ravens organization, for which the Ravens have not been interested in meeting my value. Any and everyone that has met me or been around me know I love the game of football. My dream is to help a team win the Super Bowl. You're all great. I had to make a business decision that was best for my family and I. No matter how far I go or my career takes me, I'll continue to be close to my fans of the Baltimore Flock Nation and entire state of Maryland. You will see me again. Not surprising at all. I mean, I think once we heard the chatterings and just the news coming out of the organization that at the beginning of this past year, they weren't able to come to an agreement because these negotiations started, I mean, over a year ago. Then he decided, okay, we're going to table the conversations. We're going to continue with this season. He goes on, he plays, he's injured, doesn't play in the playoffs. The Ravens almost win the game without him against the Bengals. And then we hear these negotiations again. Are they going to franchise tag him? Are they going to put the exclusive tag on him? They tag him. They don't put the exclusive franchise tag on him. But now he just comes out on Twitter and says, okay, well, this is what I've asked for. And Chase, you were gone, but essentially the NFL put out a statement that he had a guy who was his business partner.
Yeah, I saw that.
Calling teams. So the NFL said that no NFL teams were allowed to negotiate with him. So that's another layer to this. But, I mean, the owners' meetings are going on, and the Ravens are speaking right now. So
yeah, and just seeing this, that Jonathan Jones saying that from Harbaugh saying, from my perspective, I'm getting ready for Lamar, and I mean that's all he can do. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. you know he's in a tough spot right now. But I don't know, Mike Vrabel is going to be speaking here in a few minutes at the owners' meetings that are going on right now. I mean, Rick just texted me and said, get ready to eat crow. He thinks Lamar's coming here. There's no chance. They don't spend money.
He'll go to Indianapolis.
They don't spend money. They're not going to spend money on him. And also, I wouldn't if I was them. I would actually be okay if they didn't go for it.
Called shot?
Yes, called shot. Lamar Jackson is not going to be a Tennessee Titan.
No, my called shot, he's going to Indy.
That's your called shot?
He will be an Indianapolis Colt.
See, I still think Atlanta could be a factor.
Maybe.
And here's the other thing too. If you sign him here, you basically Mike Vrabel has to turn to Tim Kelly and go, hey, you know that offense that you've run your entire career? Go ahead and just throw that out the window. Change it.
Well, one of the biggest problems for Lamar is he hasn't had a true number one wide receiver with the Ravens. So we haven't truly been able to see him take that next step. And Treylon Burks is not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know if he'd have that here. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's not there yet.
Let's just cool it. It's not. And I think his best days could be behind him, too. I'm concerned about the injuries. You know, you make a valid point on a top-tier wide receiver, but I wouldn't do it, and I don't think they're going to do it either. So we'll keep you updated on that as well. But real quick, the Predators – with the losses this weekend, they're still within fighting distance. They're 5 points out of a playoff spot, but they're in that same spot that they have been for a while, even though they have games in hand, two games in hand on Winnipeg, and they're right there with Seattle. So they're fighting for that spot, but they got to put some points together, and it's not going to be easy tomorrow night against Boston.
No, you're right. I mean, they're going against one of the best teams in the NHL on the road, especially after a tough weekend here. You know, their last win was on Thursday, so they're due. But, I mean, this Boston team is complete. They're gearing up to make a big playoff run, so it's going to be a tall task, especially with the injuries.
They are legit. Coming up next, we'll talk about the Titans. The owners' meeting's going on. We'll give you some quotes from Mike Vrabel, what he has to say. because I am still, like, I'm back from Vegas and they still haven't addressed something, and I'm very concerned about it. We'll discuss that next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.